Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, congratulations to your Tampa Bay Rays, the only undefeated team, that's right, in Major League Baseball. Sure, it's early. Sure, they swept the Baltimore Orioles.
162-0, baby.
Hey, is there any reason to doubt it? I mean, we're three games into the season. It's not like it just started a few days ago.
I mean, it was 90 wins, then what, 97? I had the 40 win out of 60 the one year for COVID. 100 wins last year. Well, why not 162 this year?
As John Romano said, this is really, you should just tack this on to last year's number. 100. This should now be 103 wins.
By the way, if you're the Orioles, there's no team in baseball happier that next year's going to a more even schedule throughout and less games within your division than the Orioles with the Rays.
21 out of 22. I can't.
15
you couldn't
in
win.
A row. 15 in a row.
Think about this. In all of sports or coin tosses or games of blackjack, like pick anything that you would do 22 times. And if you're a victor 21 out of them, it almost is impossible to do. I don't care what you're playing, what game, and to think that they're doing this in Major League Baseball. And here's the thing. As many, like they won 100 games last year, and we know that they took 18 out of 19 from the Orioles. That legitimately, like that series alone, right, just that was the difference in everybody in the American League East. Everybody.
Yeah. The others went like 12-6 or 11-7 or 8 or maybe even 13-6, but 18-1 and now 3-0 this year.
My goodness.
And if you're Paul Fry for the Orioles.
Oh, my God.
So last year, against all of baseball, with the exception of the Rays, he gives up 14 earned runs in 42 and two-thirds innings. Okay, for a left-handed
reliever.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's all right.
Not great, but it's okay. Against the Rays last year, he goes 4 2/3 innings and gives up 18 earned runs. So what's he start this series out with? 3 earned runs in an inning and a third.
I'm telling you, man. If I were him when I was playing those guys, that arm would suddenly be a little sore. There's just no way I'm going to do that. And you know how many innings he has to pitch to overcome just what just happened to him?
Yeah, his ERA is 20.25, I believe, right now.
Yeah, I mean, it will take him well past the All-Star break if he even pitches well to make that go away. It was quite a series for him. They got off to a great start. Of course, 2-1 the first game, I think it was. How about this? Is Wander Franco any good?
Who?
6 of 11.
Who's that?
6 of Wander. Wander Vision. 6 of 11. If you need him, drives in 3 runs. And, oh, by the way, a couple of web gems, like a couple of great plays. He made this one over the shoulder sort of backhand into left field play, and then, of course, a diving stop. This guy, and I don't know if it'll happen this year, but you've watched a lot of baseball, Steve. You know this. And in an era where it's swing and miss, right? We are in the swing and miss era. We're in the let's see what the exit velocity can be and launch angles and all of that, right? All the sabermetrics that they're now applying on both sides, right? On the mound, velocity, et cetera, spin rate. Wander Franco plays and hits the way we're used to seeing back in the day, as they say. This guy's going to win a batting title the way as many balls as he barrels up, he's going to win a batting title if he stays healthy. And I know, you know, you can say, well, 6 for 11, he can't do that all year. No, he won't. But remember, what was it last? First of all, he only played less than what? So he played like 70 games last year, I believe, somewhere in there.
70, that's correct.
70. And so he's essentially a rookie for all intents and purposes, but he hasn't played a full season. So this will be his first full season if he makes it to the end of 162 in some form or fashion. But the way he swings the bat from both sides, switch hitter, can hit to all fields, hits with power, doesn't get, you know, there's, you know, velocity doesn't bother him, breaking balls don't bother him, and he's just getting better and better and getting to know. I mean, he's just starting. When he gets in, what's going to happen when he figures out what the league's trying to do to him? 6 of 11, great start. That's what superstars do.
No, he is phenomenal. And the expectations are so high on him, and yet he comes out and does that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't wait to see what this season holds for him in the next few seasons. As you said, I mean, he's going to learn how to handle things differently. And granted, teams are going to pitch him differently and play him differently. But the way he can adapt and the way he swings that bat, you don't see many guys like that can handle a bat the way he can and get to every pitch you throw.
It won't matter when they take away the shift, because this guy can hit to all fields. They're not, you can't play a shift on him simply because he'll hit the ball down the line, go oppo on you all day long. Pretty good decision, it looks so far, and it's only one series in against the Orioles. But Josh Lowe, yeah, he can play. He can play. I mean, they make the trade for Austin Meadows, and maybe Meadows ends up becoming the American League most valuable player. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he would have done it with the Rays, because, you know, he was in that DH-only role. But this low kid, not only does he work every pitcher over like he's a, 12-year veteran. I mean, he went 3-2 on just about everybody he saw this weekend. And he also – I didn't realize what a good athlete he is. He can run.
Mm-hmm.
This dude's a long strider. He had a stand-up triple. Can cover some ground. Obviously, he's going to play some outfield. It looks like they know what they got in this kid.
The Rays generally do. I mean,
yeah.
They hit a lot more than they miss.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a crapshoot with all this stuff. I mean, anytime you make a change or guys get called up in that. But
it's one series. I get it.
And they generally hit on the timing of two.
Right, right.
There's a few like Willy Adames they brought up who struggled mightily when he first came up.
Mm-hmm.
They sent him back down. I don't know if it was a month, 6 weeks, something like that.
Yeah.
And then when they brought him back up, he took off. Occasionally that happens. But more often than not, when they call a guy up, it's because he's ready. You know, Wander Franco last year, although he struggled a little bit at first too, and that's going to happen. It was really, really when they got Nelson Cruz, it kind of settled him down. And he stopped swinging and missing at that point.
It did, yes.
And I don't know if it was just Nelson Cruz in the lineup helped that, or if it was actually Nelson Cruz kind of mentoring him a little bit, or maybe a combination of all of that. But once Nelson Cruz got there, he stopped swinging and missing, and he was hitting everything.
Yeah.
Or making contact on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But when they made the trade with Austin Meadows, that meant you knew they were confident Josh Lowe was ready, and they were going to play him more often than not, because you're not calling him up to sit on the bench.
Nope.
A young guy like that needs to play. So that means they're confident he's ready. Now, he's got to show it and prove it, and he's going to go through some growing pains, and there's going to be times where it's going to struggle, and that's just how baseball is, particularly over a 162-game schedule. But it's exciting to see that you can see that right away in the first series.
And, Shane McClanahan pitched his way out of some trouble in the first inning of his
way to hit the first pitch. Hit the batter on your first pitch.
You let everybody know you're going to take charge. You don't dig in on me, because I'm just wild enough at 100 miles an hour to plunk you. So I actually think that's kind of a good thing. It's never comforting to stand up there with a guy who can throw 100 and just in the back of your mind realize that he could hit you with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's never comforting. So he got that out of the way early. But he worked out a bases loaded jam and he burned through some pitches and whatnot. But they win the first game with a couple of sac flies, which was interesting. It's a tight game, 2-1 game. They get the big fly ball when they need it. And then they're able to bash you, the way they did on Sunday and score a ton of runs. I really, really liked, and I don't know if he can keep it up, but Corey Kluber looks so good. And it was just too bad his pitch count got run up a little bit unnecessarily. And to be honest, he got squeezed in the last inning, I thought. He had strike three one time. And he gets pulled. I'll get to this beef in a minute. I just think Kluber, for the young pitching staff they have, he is his approach and just his stoicism out there on the mound, and nothing's gonna face him. Apparently, he has great work ethic and all that. Who knows if you can get this guy or want, you'll probably don't want to get him to 200 innings, but it wasn't that long ago that he did pitch that. Obviously, he's had a series of injuries and things, but man, is he in control out there. And can, and you know, he may top out at low 90s or something, but this dude will work you over with location, changing speeds, in and out, up and down. I mean, he's all over the strike zone. And just the art of pitching is just evident in everything he does. He looks so good. My beef is, and we talked about this before the podcast, is they had two pitchers this weekend. McClanahan, I think, was the first one that went 4 2/3 innings, and they did not give up a run, I don't believe. Maybe Shane did. I'm not sure. I don't believe he did. But they basically left with either a win or should have gotten the win. Again, Kluber did for sure. They were up 4-0, I think, when he went out. I don't. This is a 200-year-old rule or whatever. Whenever baseball started, that in order to qualify, not up to the scorekeeper, but in order to qualify for the win, which again, sabermetrics people will tell you it's not that important. I would tell you I'm getting paid by my wins. You have to pitch 4 2/3 innings, and I'm sorry, but if I throw 4 2/3 shutout innings and an umpire misses strike three on me one time and my pitch count is up and it's the first week of the season and it's my first start and they're trying to build up my arms because I had a short spring training and they take me out with less than 90 pitches or whatever, I don't get the win, but everybody else can throw a third of an inning or an inning the rest of the way and the scorekeeper gets to decide who the winning pitcher is. That rule's got to go. And I'm afraid that baseball would never do it, even though they're changing the game in ways that we've never seen before, right, with the you know, the extra innings rule and the ghost runner and all that stuff. And that obviously changes stats and all kinds of things. They've got to get rid of this. We have openers now, right? We have all closers. We have all these different eighth inning guys, you know, and all that stuff. You can't mandate that a pitcher have to go five innings to give the win to him.
You can if you're trying to keep salaries now.
That's true. Maybe that's the Rays' bet. Maybe that's
Well, I don't think it's the Rays. I mean, baseball. I mean, you know, look, I mean, openers are being used more often throughout baseball.
Right.
Pitchers are going less, particularly the beginning of this season when we know pitchers' arms aren't stretched out yet. You know, you only had 3 weeks of spring training, essentially, or four, 3 weeks of games. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the pitchers' arms aren't stretched out. You know that most pitchers aren't going to go five innings to start at the early part of the season. So, yeah, it's an old, antiquated rule. It should change. It won't for a while.
Do you think the baseball really does have that economic? Like, do you think there's people in baseball that go, well, you know, if we change this and the guy wins 20 games, we're going to have to pay him?
I don't think that's the reason they won't change the rule, but it's a nice side effect of it.
Do you remember, I'm old enough to, I'm not afraid to admit this, I'm old enough to remember when the Baltimore Orioles had 4 20-game winners on the same staff. Mm-hmm. And then, granted, Jim Palmer's a Hall of Fame pitcher. I think Mike Cuero was on that staff. Dave McNally. There's one other that I'm probably missing. You guys can call in if you want to. Or call in. You can write us in. Well, you can call me if you want to. My home number is. And now, if there's a 20-game winner, it's a shock, right? It seems surprising. Somebody can win 20 games.
Yeah, I mean, generally the best pitchers now are 17, 18.
Yeah. But there was multiple. I mean, there used to be multiple on the same staff. Same staff, you might have a couple 20-game winners. Now that would probably never happen. But anyway, Kluber looked great. They do have, some, I guess, a little bit of bad news in that Ryan Yarbrough, I guess, was he have some kind of injury?
Groin, it looks like.
Okay.
So
he miss his start.
He's going to miss. It looks like they're calling up Tommy Romero, one of their young arms that they've got waiting to come up and make
That's
an
cool.
impact. And you know that he's the next guy with great stuff on this team.
Yeah.
So That'll we're going to get to see him earlier than expected. I mean, you know, there was no question he was going to be up at some point this year or multiple times, but didn't quite expect the first week.
Yeah. Nice of them to get off to a 3-0 start. Only the third time that that's happened in franchise history. If they win today against the Oakland A's, who are probably near or at the bottom of the barrel with the Baltimore Orioles, I think, this year, expected to be, they could go 4-0 for the first time in franchise history. That was a surprise. I didn't know that would be the case. But
it sure has seemed like the last few years, like they lose the opener and then you'll like win five or six in a row.
That's true.
But
they were 500 over their life. This is the 25th year of Rays baseball that started last week, and they were 12-12 on opening day.
Okay. Well, 13-12 now.
Now they're 13-12 now, yeah. So they have lost as many as they've won on opening day, except for one. And so, yeah, that's why you don't get the 3-0 start, much less the 4-0 start. But against – look, these are the teams, and, you never know. I mean, opening day can go either way. It was a 2-1 game. You want to win series. They did that. They swept the Orioles, which seems to be what they've done of late. And now you get another team that you should win a series against, and that's what you want to do at home. So kind of a nice little entrance ramp to the season, if you will. You get out there, you stretch some arms, you get some at bats, and you're not maybe going against the Yankees and the Red Sox, for example, who had to battle each other the first series of the year.
Yeah, and it's good to see. I think the Rays kind of lucked out this year not having to face Boston was going to be the opener.
I think they're going to Boston.
And then Toronto were going to be the first two series. So instead, now you get Baltimore and Oakland. Of course,
that helps.
Now you got to make those games up, and you're going to have two five-game series in Toronto.
Oh, is that what they're doing? Okay.
Because you're going up there and because of Canada and all that, but it's going to be 2 5-game series up there.
Wow.
Which 4-game series are bad enough. Five. Oof.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of pitching being burned up in one time.
And then the Boston series got added on to the end of the season.
Huh.
So that's the way baseball's making it up, is they added one series on at the end of the season. The other series you're making up with games throughout the season, either doubleheaders or extra trips in or, depending on who the team was in the series.
Kind of they're going to play this series against the A's, and I'll be out there Thursday, by the way, shameless plug, to cover it for the Tampa Bay Times. After that, they go to Chicago for like 6 days. And, of course, my in-laws are in Chicago. That's no secret. But I think it's cool as heck. If you're a Rays fan, if you can make your way up to the Windy City, they play the White Sox and then the Cubs. How cool is that? That you could just kind of hang out and, follow the Rays?
I wonder if the players like that.
I don't know. Well, you don't have to unpack. You're in the same hotels, maybe.
It is, but a week in a city sometimes can be like, okay, I've had enough.
You think?
I don't know. I know I've gone to Vegas for a week before. I love going to Vegas.
Two different ballparks, though.
Yeah. No, right? And granted, you're working and it's not like you're just there vacationing for a week.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if the players like that or not. I suppose you could switch hotels. They might. They may stay.
They could. One's on the south side, so they likely probably are staying at a different hotel.
I don't think most of the teams stay by this. I think in Chicago they stay downtown.
You stay downtown always. Yeah.
So they're probably in the same hotel.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's the one thing the brief time that I've covered baseball for the Rays or for the Tampa Bay Times, I did a couple series, but I did one in Baltimore. It's good and bad, right? You're away from home a lot, obviously, if you're a baseball beat writer, which is something I couldn't fathom doing. Mark Tompkin has done it for 25 years. He's been the only Rays writer we've had at the Tampa Bay Times. Just remarkable that he's started his 25th season. But what I noticed immediately is, we're an in and out. Sometimes we're in a city 20 hours. I have gone to games the morning of because they played at night and then worked till 2 and got in a plane at 6 a.m. and didn't know why I got a hotel because it seemed like a total waste of money for the 2 hours I slept. But I have done that. In baseball, the coolest thing was I got to a hotel and I was like, I can unpack my suitcase if I want to. Like, I can literally take out clothing, put it in a drawer. I always wondered what these drawers were for because they have like a whole chest of drawers and hangers and things if you want to put things away. I've never done that because I'm not in the city long enough. It just means I'd have to repack. Not that there's a lot that I'm bringing in the first place. But that's the one thing that it's kind of cool. Knowing that you're not catching a plane the next day, and so from that standpoint, it's neat. It's a grind. Don't get me wrong, but
yeah, I've done that grind before, and it's it is nice. The 3-game series are nice. The 4-game, it always felt like you stayed a day too long,
one too late.
And the 2-game series, you're like, was I even in this town? Particularly if it's you play like a Tuesday night, Wednesday afternoon, and gone, and you're like, whoa, wait, was I even there?
You've just described the NFL.
Yeah, pretty much.
The way the NFL
pretty much.
Goes.
Yeah.
You'll come usually no sooner than Saturday, and they'll play on Sunday, and you're on a plane first thing Monday morning, come hell or high water. And sometimes you're on a plane Sunday night if you can get back. You know, mm-hmm. Charlotte's one of those cities. Atlanta's one of those cities.
New Orleans can be.
New Orleans sometimes, yeah. And, you know, the New York, the bigger airports that stay open.
Yeah. Although not so much anymore, because a lot of those games are primetime now with Tom Brady in town.
Well, that but see,
although
this
now
is
you go get, day of, though.
Now I get killed. Right. Now it's 20-hour days, because now it's like, well, you don't have to be there the day before, because what are you going to do, really? So now it's like, hey, do you mind getting up at 4 a.m., catching that 6 a.m., up to Chicago or New York or wherever. And then, you know, the game's not till 8, so you'll get there by, I don't know, 2, noon? What are you going to do? So hang out. The problem with that is sometimes you get in these cities and, like, your room's not ready till 3 or 4, which, you know, you're there at 10 a.m. and you're like, okay, well, I can only eat lunch so long. So you might get in your room, change clothes, go to the stadium, and that's where you're catching that plane back at 6 a.m. You're up at 4, but you're not back till 2 because you got a night game. It doesn't work out that way. It's much better from the standpoint of travel, at least, that they don't have primetime games. But you can bet with the list of quarterbacks on this schedule next year, there's going to be whatever the maximum is, 5. They're going to have 5 plus whatever they flex, which could be 2. So there's going to be a ton of primetime games next year for sure. And we'll get the schedule out sometime end of this month, probably, I would think.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We've got, spent some time with the Tampa Bay Lightning over the weekend. It looks like they've turned a corner. We've said this before. They played a really good game against Boston and lost, but they followed it up with a even better game against Buffalo and won in a shutout. The Moose was on the loose in net.
He's been Elliot. Fantastic the last
really
6, 7, 8 starts. Just
really has.
Just incredible. But, yeah, the Lightning Friday against Boston, you go 1-1 in overtime. You dominated the third period. You were dominating overtime for the most part. Got an unlucky bounce off the boards, mm-hmm. and they put that in. So you garnered a point there. You know, you would have liked 2. You played well enough for 2, but against a good team, you'll take it. You came out and flexed against Buffalo. You know, put two goals in 17 seconds in the first period,
mm-hmm.
And then you know scored 2 more in the second and kind of put it away. But you really like the way their game is kind of coming together. They got 10 games left now. Magic number to make the playoffs is 2. So any 2 points by the Lightning or 2 points dropped by the Islanders, and both teams play Tuesday night. So by Tuesday night, the Lightning could be guaranteed a playoff spot. You like the way they're playing, and with Ryan McDonagh back on Sunday night, everything on the defense just it
changed.
You don't feel shaky anymore. You just everyone slots back to their where they should be on the defense.
Yep,
and he's their best defender at controlling the blue line,
mm-hmm.
standing up at the blue line,
mm-hmm.
and he just calms things down in the back end.
That's the word. The word I was going to use was calm. He brought calm to their game. They've been having trouble. Look, they've turned it over so much. They've been having trouble getting it out of their own zone, mm-hmm. you know. And just his ability to clear the puck and to make the right pass and like you said, stand them up at their blue line. He was phenomenal without any wasted energy. Like you watch him play when they're all whole like that, and he, you know, you get your lines back together, and it's just a different. It's a totally different feel. Of course, Elliott had some great saves as well. But I thought, you know, they look like the Lightning pretty much as we remember them the last 2 games. And this is, look, they got to do it. They got 10 games left. I thought it was interesting. Like, maybe Cooper was just, I don't know, doing some fast math in his head. But he was talking about Elliott and how well he's played. And he goes, well, we got, like, what, 10 games left? So maybe, I don't know, Vasilevsky gets 6 and Elliott gets 4? That would surprise me a little bit.
Well, they've said they want Elliott to get at least a game a week going down. So essentially 3 weeks left, that's 3.
Yeah, that's true.
You're ending on a back-to-back, so you figure Vazzy gets one, Elliott gets the other of that. Yeah. But so, I mean, it's really, I mean, one more game maybe than you would have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe he gets Saturday against Winnipeg. Maybe he gets, oh, actually, you got two back-to-backs. You got the Nashville-Florida back-to-back at the end of next week, and then you end in Columbus Islanders. So there's at least two. You get the Winnipeg game, and maybe he gets another game in there. I mean, yeah. You know, once you clinch the playoffs, the Lightning aren't concerned of where they finish in the standings and who they play. And as well as Ellie's been playing lately, why not rest Vazzy a little more?
Well, I would, and here's the thing, and I don't know if this will be the case. I suppose it would be when you get into the postseason. Vazzy's never taken a game off in the postseason and probably wouldn't unless he were injured, I suppose.
No, I mean, he'll start every game in the postseason, no question.
Right. So he has, and you know, you're hoping to win 16. You know, you're hoping to win a Stanley Cup, which is a lot of games. It's not how many he would play, but how many he'd have to win. So that is a long, grueling grind to play that many games, sometimes back-to-back. But so you got to get him some kind of rest going into it. And he looked like a tired goaltender to me, you know, in part because guys like McDonough were out and they weren't protecting him very much. And mm-hmm. he was facing a lot of shots and maybe he wasn't as sharp, but he just looks tired. You know, and so this is the perfect time, the way Elliott's playing especially, to go ahead and get him as much rest as you can so that he's mm-hmm. fresh. Nothing but fresh. Because he's going to, like all those players and all great players, he's going to find his another gear when he gets to the postseason, as he always does. Just look at mm-hmm. his record in elimination games and how many shutouts he's had in a row. So you don't, you know, Vassie's, like, if you have 99 problems, Vassie ain't one of them, right?
Well, that's the whole thing about the playoffs, and two things with that. One, last year I think Vazzy rested three of the last six games or something. He didn't even make the trip to Detroit late in the season. They had a back-to-back, like New York, Detroit, or whatever. Or no, they may have played back-to-back games in Detroit. Cause
they kept them home. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, they didn't even travel them. But last year you had that third goalie and you had COVID stuff and expanded rosters and that.
They don't
have that ability this year to just not dress Vasilevsky for a game based on the salary cap. But you look at the Eastern Conference, and there's, you know, we already know the eight teams. I mean, the Islanders technically are still alive, and there's, well, I think four of the playoff teams haven't clinched yet, but they're all within a couple points of clinching. I mean, the Islanders are 15 points behind the Capitals with 11 games to play. They're not making that up. And the Capitals are playing well now. But go through the playoff teams. Tell me which ones don't have questions in goal. There's one. The Lightning.
Really? I know a lot of teams.
Sergei Bobrovsky of the Panthers. He has won one playoff series in his career.
Oh, yeah.
That was against the Lightning in 2019.
Columbus. He went 4-0, yeah.
You know. Toronto, they've got goalies. Boston's got two goalies.
They have two, yeah.
Carolina, is Frederik Andersen ready to win four series?
I mean, he's played pretty well. I don't know.
He's played well, but the playoffs are a different animal, and he hasn't done well in the playoffs.
What about Florida?
But that's Bobrovsky.
Well, that's Bobrovsky. Okay,
Shesterkin, really good young goalie.
Going to win the Vesna.
We're going to win the Vesna, but we haven't seen him in the playoffs yet. So it's not to say he won't be good.
But unproven.
Yeah. Tristan Jarry's got question marks at Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, every team in the Eastern Conference.
That's a good point.
Has questions. Not to say their goalies aren't good. Doesn't mean that their goalies aren't going to perform extremely well in this playoffs. But the only one you can sit there in the Eastern Conference and go, they got no questions. There's no question Andrei Vasilevsky is going to get every minute of every playoff game the Lightning plays as long as he's healthy. Not a question. Brian Elliott ain't playing in the playoffs unless something happens. I mean, they're the only team in the Eastern Conference, and there's a lot of good teams, and there's teams with better records than Lightning. They're the only ones that have zero questions in goal, which is the most important position on your team.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. And, you know, the playoffs do funny things to people, and he's mm-hmm. proven. So it's kind of like the quarterback when we go into the postseason, you go, what's your confidence level coach quarterback? And that's usually how I mm-hmm. kind of figure out who I like in the playoff game. It's kind of like that with goaltenders. What's your confidence level? Mm-hmm. You know, who has a higher confidence level than John Cooper and Vasilevsky? I mean, you can pair them up with any coach goaltender in mm-hmm. the NHL, and you're going to come up with that same equation. So,
well, in the last 2 years in the playoffs, and granted, every playoff year is different. they'd never lost back-to-back games. After a loss, you know what you're going to get in Vasilevsky.
It's incredible. Yeah.
I mean, you know, the last two, granted, every playoff year is different, and I think the Eastern Conference is stronger this year than it's been. I think it's so top-heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, five or six of these teams legitimately. I don't think Washington can win. I don't think they can string four series together to win a cup. You keep wanting to say Pittsburgh can't, but, man, they just keep – I mean, Sidney Crosby is just unreal. But the Rangers, I still worry about Shesterkin. I mean, like I said, the only team that doesn't have a question mark in goal is the Lightning. And that gives you a huge advantage in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because you don't, your team isn't sitting there, you know, if any one of those other goalies lets in an early goal that's soft, what's going through the team's mind? The coach's mind.
Can't handle the pressure.
You know, we kind of saw that with Nedeljkovic with Carolina last year in the playoff series. And Florida went through three goalies in that first series against the Lightning.
They did.
Last year. I mean, Vasilevsky, if he lets in a soft early goal, not one person's questioning it.
Right.
Nobody's looking over his shoulder. The coaches aren't sitting there going, oh, do we got a problem? I mean, it's Vasilevsky show, period.
Mm-hmm.
Every other team, you get a soft early goal, and who knows what's going through their mind. And that's an advantage the Lightning have in the playoffs.
No, and that's, you know, the experience in having won two Stanley Cups and having, you know, played five overtime games and, you know, all the things that he's, you know, when you put that much on the wall and you're still a young, you know, player who's, well, outward appearances, healthy and all that, their experience at this time of year means everything. I know some people go, well, this team has playoff experience and this team doesn't, and then the team that doesn't winds up winning because they're just more talented. But we know that this Lightning team has talent. It's more about they play the whole season. It's a zero-sum game for these guys. They're trying to make history, right? They're trying to three-peat. Which hasn't been done in forever.
1983 was the last.
Think about that.
And the Islanders had won four in a row.
That's just incredible. And, you know, prior to that, there weren't as many teams. So, you know, Montreal seemed like they won three in a row all the time, and the Oilers and all that. But, yeah, to try to make history, like, what does the regular season really mean, if not just a tune-up and really a survival of attrition to get to the postseason so they can do their work? I mean, this is how you don't. You know, you can set yourself in a position to make the playoffs and to maybe have a better seed or some home ice against certain teams during the regular season, but you're not going to win a Stanley Cup there. They've proven that. They had the best record in hockey, the most points, and they lost four games to Columbus. And ever since then, it's only been about the postseason, and they've won two Stanley Cups, and now they're going for their third. So this team knows what where they have to be. And what's been interesting during these struggles, and they did struggle, has been sort of, you know, and it's cliche, and they talk, well, it's the process. We got to get back to the process over results. But they know what that process is, and it leads to the results. And when they play the right way with this group of guys that are still predominantly together, they did lose a third line. I love some of the guys they picked up down the stretch. They're all paying off now. And the more they play together, the better they're going to be. Paul and and all of that. But I do think that experience, when you've been there and you know what it, so they know what they're supposed to be playing like. They know what that system is. They know what that process is. And if they stick to it, they know they're going to win hockey games. And they've got 10 games now. They played two of these in a row that I thought looked like the Lightning. And they've got 10 more to go. And if they can stay on that track where they find their game, they're going to be okay because, like you said, a lot of these guys, when they get in the postseason, they're largely unproven, and you don't know what's going to happen in a seven-game series. But
now,
anyway,
the one question I do have about the Lightning, it's not really a question, but you've got some teams in the East that are going to be hungry.
Very, you know? Yeah.
And does the Lightning's desire to win three in a row match that hunger? I mean,
Great point.
Back to Washington back in 2018.
Oh, yeah, Ovechkin was desperate for a Stanley Cup.
Well, and they get knocked out by Pittsburgh over and over and over, and they finally got over that hurdle, and they were not going to be denied.
Nope.
I think the Lightning in 20, in the bubble.
Yep.
I think they were so ticked off over 19.
Over Columbus, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that pause, maybe some teams didn't care to be there as much or want to be, but the Lightning were like, we're winning.
They embraced it, yep.
And they, you know, they were hungry for it.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody going to stop them. You know, is a team like Carolina, who's been really good but can't get out of the second round of the playoffs.
Right.
Or Florida, who, you know, continues not to be able to, you know, haven't won a playoff series in a long time. Toronto, who hasn't won a playoff series since, what, 2004 or 6 or something. You know, what are the hunger level of those teams? You know, Washington and Pittsburgh haven't won a playoff series since 18, I think. You know, with Ovechkin and Crosby. Since Washington won the Cup, neither of those teams have won a playoff series.
Mm.
You know, is Sidney Crosby or Alex Ovechkin going to care? You know, and so it's that will you talk about. And I think every team's got it in the playoffs, but sometimes a team just has it more than others.
Has more, yeah.
Is that desire to be, as Dave Mishkin has said many times, generational for the Lightning? I mean, it's been since 1983 since a team has won three in a row. Well before the salary cap.
Wow.
Well before the way the game's played. I mean, it was the Islanders who won four in a row at that point.
Right.
The Lightning know what's ahead of them. Is that drive enough to push them through? Because you're going to, I mean, like I said, the Eastern Conference is loaded. The top half of the Eastern Conference, it's going to be an incredible, I mean, Colorado or Calgary are the favorites, two in the West. And, you know, they're the best two teams in the West. Their road to the final is going to be a lot easier than the Eastern Conference.
Well, there's,
I mean, there's
arguably
good teams in the West, but.
But arguably, there's probably, okay, there's probably, what, five teams that could win the East, right?
I mean, the overall seed? Or,
yeah,
or
well,
in
not
the
seeding,
yeah.
But, like, if I said to you, I'm going to give you, could any of these teams, is there a good chance that any of these teams could win? The Rangers, the Hurricane, the Panthers, the Lightning, who am I missing?
Toronto. Yeah. I mean,
None of those would surprise you necessarily. They all have a good to very good chance to win the East. You can't say that in the West. How many teams you get? Three?
I mean, I would say Colorado. I'd say Calgary.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Kings have been such a surprise this year. Vegas is.
They're always
they
kind
in
of
the playoffs
around.
At this point. Vegas is the Western changes. Yeah, Vegas isn't even in the playoffs at this point. I mean, that would have been the other team at the beginning of the year. You would have said. I really like the Wild.
Minnesota's coming on, yeah.
I think they're probably the third best team. St. Louis is up there. Edmonton finally started, although I still don't think Edmonton's got enough in the goal to win four series.
Right.
LA's
My
been
point
a
is,
surprise,
it seems wide open in the East, whereas in the West, if I gave you two within three teams, you could probably name the Western Conference champion.
I think it's Colorado, Calgary, or Minnesota.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those three will be the ones that represent the Western Conference. The Eastern Conference, I would say Florida, Tampa Bay, Carolina,
Rangers,
Toronto. I don't know if the Rangers.
You're not
can
a Rangers
win
guy.
They're really good. I think they're a year or two early.
Man, they look good against the Lightning.
They do. They do.
Everybody does, but I don't know. Strong goaltender, inexperienced, young, but Vasi was young at one point too.
I mean, so. I question Boston with goaltending too. I mean, I mean, they got that top line. And granted, they've broken up the line now, which has really helped them because they finally got some pieces and some second line scoring there. But I still don't know if they've got enough to win four series. I mean, to win a playoff series or two, but to win four series is tough. Three to get out of the East, I guess.
16 games, baby.
Yeah, you got to win 12 to get out of the East and into the final.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a fun playoffs. It's going to start 3 weeks from tonight. It's the playoffs, so.
It's incredible. We could do this or we could hold it. I wrote a story in the Tampa Bay Times. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow a little bit on Todd Bowles and why he is maybe an even better coach or a better fit. Not a better coach, but a better fit for Tom Brady than Bruce Arians was. It might surprise you. And it's about Bowles' history and Brady's history. So let's kind of hang on to that one tomorrow. You can check it out in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com, and we'll discuss it, I think, sometime on tomorrow's show. Just wrapping up the weekend, the Masters, Scottie Scheffler, pick up your I Am Dominating Golf. If you don't know me, I'm the number one player in the world. And he had such a big lead coming down. You know, usually they say, well, the Masters begins and the back nine on Sunday. Not so much, because he had such a big lead. that he was able to four putt on the 18th green and still win by like three. He lapped the field. It was, you know, the weekend, even though it was painful, not just to watch, but to see Tiger Woods be in pain coming down the stretch on Saturday and especially on Sunday, the Masters still belonged to Tiger Woods, because the more you watch this guy and you're thinking, man, 14 months ago, he literally didn't know if he's going to lose his leg or his life after that car accident, and to see him out there competing. But then you were reminded that, you know, golf is not a game. You can walk the rolling hills of Augusta on one leg. And he managed to gut it out, and he made it to the finish line. The ovation he got on 18 moved him. And it was hard to watch without, you know, thinking of just how this guy, what he has meant to the game, and just in a surreal sort of moment to see him back at Augusta. It, for me, it put a lot more interest in the Masters, especially held my interest until at least Saturday when he shot a 78 and was pretty much out of it. But that, you know, he's taken a lot of walks on Sunday with that red shirt up onto the 18th. And it was, that was an emotional one, as emotional almost as when he won it a couple of years ago. And of course he had no chance at all. He wasn't in contention. The only thing better would have been if he found his way back into contention. And the thing is, he intended to, he had every intention of doing that. Even after Saturday, or, you know, Saturday's round, no, Friday's round, he was, you know, still,
he was plus
almost,
one. He was plus
almost
one.
Almost in red numbers, you know, and he probably still felt that if he went out there, shot a good number, the wind was going to be, it's going to be colder, it's going to be windy, he might pick up, you know, five or six strokes. Scheffler wasn't letting anybody catch him. He shot another terrific round, and he was pretty consistent throughout the entire tournament. That's why he won by so much. But I got to hand it to Tiger, man. That guy, he totally gutted it out. And now he says he's going to play in the British Open, and I would wager he's not going to play another tournament until he gets there. And it may take him that long to recover. But he does something every day, and it had to be tough as the tournament wore on. He certainly seemed to wear down. But, man, what an effort, and how good it was to see him back at the Masters.
Yeah, it's funny. I was trying to think back, I mean, with Scheffler winning that in dominating fashion, the last time I remember a dominating Masters performance. And the only one I can think of
might have been Tiger. Yeah.
The one
might
year he just, he lapped the field. I mean, it's probably been 20 years ago now, or close to, but
yeah,
I remember, yeah, and that one that was, you know, wasn't even close.
The guy that was second turned out, he did it all in one round. It was Roy McIlroy. He shot a course record. The guy shot 64. He was like seven under.
Yeah, Cam, you know, Smith, what, he triple bogeyed number 12 and that cut his payday in half.
That hurt. 12. You could stay a long time on that 12th hole.
Yes, it's just, yes.
It's brutal, man. You can have a snowman on there, no problem. I can't imagine playing one of those holes and what my score would be. But Smith had been playing really, really well. I thought he was the only one that could run him down. Rory, had he not waited until the last day, might have had a better look at it. But, yeah, it was – like I said, it was so funny. He was up by so much that he missed a couple of three-footers on 18 and triple bogeyed, I think, or double bogeyed the final hole of the tournament, and still he gets the green jacket. So that was a great finish. So we got a lot to talk about. The Bucks begin their off-season workout program. They do that starting, I believe, Tuesday. I think that's right. Yes, Tuesday. We will have access to some players and maybe a coach or two. We'll see. But we'll be over there at the Advent Health training facility and be able to talk to the Bucks. They've still got, you know, Gronk's been on some late night shows talking about how he hasn't decided, and his girlfriend wants him to play, and he did Nickelodeon. He's kind of all over the place, but he doesn't want to talk contract until he makes a decision about whether to play or not. Me personally, it's interesting to me that he hasn't made that decision. I guess if he's going to play, he has said it's only going to be here in Tampa. I don't know that's a slam dunk that he does, though. He's left Brady before. He could leave him again. But in any case, there's no reason to really decide anything like that until you get past the OTAs and maybe even past the mandatory minicamp. You could sign as late as the start of training camp and still, you know, they'd be happy to have him. We'll see what they do in the draft to address the tight end position. They got to do that anyway. But obviously Tom wants him back, and usually Tom gets what Tom wants. So you're kind of counting on that. Other than that, it was, you know, it was a good weekend. Enjoyed kind of watching a lot of sports and kicking back a little bit, working on some Bucks stories. We got the draft coming up, and the end of the month, it's almost here. We're only a couple weeks away from that. So that's always a good time. And then there'll be a week or so off, and we'll have the mini camp and roll on into OTAs. But, yeah, the Bucks organizing now for the 2022 season, their first day back. And it's, you know, mostly physical stuff, you know, conditioning for the most part. I think phase one is mostly conditioning and some meetings, and it'll be a while before they're out on the field.
A question for you. Mm-hmm. Todd Bowles is a new coach.
Yes.
Does he get the extra?
Would have, yes. He would have qualified for that. However,
it was too late.
The Bucks had given all coaches the weeks off.
Okay.
And so it happened so late. And to be honest, you know, that's a perk mm-hmm. that sort of was put in there because new coaches have new systems. And, mm-hmm. you know, could the Bucks have used it? I mean, a lot of coaches think you can't coach enough, right? You get more time you spend with your players, the better. But for the most part, this team has been together. The staff has continuity all the way through it and going into its fourth year now. There's nothing they need to install. I mean, surely Bowles will have some spins on some things and how he wants to run stuff and call plays and stuff. But, yeah, it was from my understanding, it was merely that they had already given the coaches the week off,
mm-hmm.
and they were going to call them back and or players.
Well, I'm sure Tom Brady's already conducting his own OTAs or, you know, organized
meetings. I don't know. He might have to – I mean, if he's trying to get Berkeley prep time, he might have to run off Mac Jones. You see that? Mac Jones and the Patriots working out at Berkeley prep?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably set up by Nelson Aguilar, taking a page out of Brady circa 2020. When I went out there and made my way through the bushes and spotted the white rhino before anybody else did, other than the helicopters flying overhead a few days later.
When will Channel 13 find it and put it on video?
Well, they had the first videotape from a helicopter, I'll grant you that. But I don't think they captured Mac Jones and the Patriots right out here at
well, give them a couple weeks.
Yeah. But that would be a thing, right? If Mac Jones and the Patriots go on to win a Super Bowl, you can bet they will – The dance card will be full. Berkeley can charge almost anything for their facility the spring after that because teams will be trying to dive in there and see where the magic sauce is. But it's like Field of Dreams all of a sudden. But I thought that was interesting. Mac following in the footsteps of Brady, and it's mostly Nelson that probably set it up, and they got their guys to Florida. Sad thing, speaking of guys coming to Florida and playing, just horrible. Dwayne Haskins. Former Ohio State quarterback, of course, first round pick of the Washington football team, and then on to Pittsburgh, was down essentially for a passing camp with Mitch Trubisky and others for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and was, you know, just tragically hit by a dump truck walking, I believe, or as a pedestrian on that. If you've ever been to South Florida, the Fort Lauderdale Airport, there's this little junction there that I-595 that kind of rolls into the Fort Lauderdale International Airport. Anyway, struck and killed. I believe that was Saturday morning sometime. And when news broke, boy, it was just it's one of those where it takes the wind out of you. Like, he was going to be 25 years old early next month. So he's 24. He came out of Ohio State pretty early and had that one, 50 touchdown season or something like that for the Buckeyes. Just by all accounts, I've never met Dwayne Haskins, but by all accounts, he was, just a warm human being, always smiling, great attitude, everybody loved him, sort of thing. And of course, like I said, it's anytime somebody that young, dies, much less on a highway somewhere in South Florida, it's just tragic. There was a lot of pushback. I know Adam Schefter, his initial tweet announcing this this tragedy mentioned. To some, I'm not quoting him exactly, but mentioned something like how he had, to this point been a disappointment in his career. People jumped on that. Gil Brandt had some terrible things that he wished he could take back on NFL radio about Haskins leaving Ohio State early and how he lived his life. Just no place for that. You know, it's unfortunate. It's just careless, really. And the bottom line is his family, his football family, anyone who knew him, or really just in general, you hear something like that, and it's just so tragic and it takes your breath away. But that was you know, that was another, it was another quarterback who was joining, you know, somebody that is the presumed starter to have a passing camp. That's the kind of team guy he was. He went down there and with running backs and wide receivers, and they were going to meet and throw and spend some time with each other as good teams do. So, yeah, just a terrible story. I'm sure we're going to learn more details as weeks go on, but unimaginable that something like that would happen. So on that happy note, it was a good weekend. Your son scored a great goal in soccer. My daughter had a role in a play at Bob Martinez Middle School, Mary Poppins Jr. She was Jane Banks. She killed it. So, you know, proud papa moments over the weekend too.
Absolutely. Love those moments.
Yeah, that's what we live for. So anyway, enjoy your Monday. We'll be back throughout the week. We're gonna have our mailbag segment. Might do a couple of them actually, because I got a bunch of mailbag stuff, but in conjunction with our other news of the day. So if you want, you can get those questions in, send them to us at SportsDayTB. You can reach me on Twitter at NFL Stroud. My email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. For Steve Burstick, I am Eric Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.